The World This Week, News and Analysis. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Soviet Union's most vocal critic this week was stripped of his citizenship and banished from his homeland. The daughter of one of this country's most prominent publishers is still missing almost 2 weeks after being kidnapped from her home. The foreign ministers of oil-consuming nations came to Washington this week. There was question afterward about the price the European common market may have paid for that trip. Higher gasoline prices were approved, but many dealers were dissatisfied. And at the White House, amazement at the UFO. It was real, a marauding helicopter out there on the lawn. Once before, the Soviet Union stripped a citizen of his birthrights and forcibly shipped him out of the country, Leon Trotsky, more than four decades ago. Then it happened again this week. Dissident writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who was banished to West Germany and has since gone to Switzerland. There are Soviet assurances that Solzhenitsyn's family can follow him into exile. There's still a question about the release of his archives. It may be that other dissidents also will be banished, as Murray Fromson reports from Moscow.
His expulsion may be the Kremlin's first step in getting rid of other well-known dissidents like Dr. Andrei Sakharov. Authorities may have concluded that expulsion is the most sanitized way of handling their thorniest critics. Only time will tell if that indeed is their intention. Lesser-known figures are sure to face an even greater threat of arrest and harassment. Solzhenitsyn stood apart from other dissidents, but his frequent challenges to the Soviet government focused attention on the lonely struggle for human rights. In that sense, his departure will be a blow to the remaining dissidents. As an emigre, Solzhenitsyn's words may also have less impact. The Kremlin could be gambling on that. Several factors probably led to his dramatic departure. Having painted Solzhenitsyn as a traitor, authorities had to deal with him or undermine their own credibility among the Soviet people. They also had to discourage the underground circulation of Gulag Archipelago and head off mounting criticism among Western communists for their handling of the case. And finally, Brezhnev and his colleagues may have come to the tardy conclusion that to keep detente from unraveling completely, the persecution of Solzhenitsyn had to end. And so it finally has. Murray Fromson, CBS News, Moscow.
The imprisonment of Patricia Hearst, purportedly the kidnapped victim of the Symbionese Liberation Army, has continued into a second week. After she was forcibly taken from her Berkeley, California apartment, the SLA demanded that her father, publisher Randolph Hearst, provide food for the state's poor that could cost up to $400 million. The terrorists said only that they would consider that a sign of goodwill, and they set a deadline, this Tuesday. Then they sent a tape recording of Patricia Hearst to a San Francisco radio station.
Mom, Dad, I'm okay. I had a few scrapes and stuff, but they washed them up and they're getting okay, and caught a cold, but they're giving me pills for it, and so I'm not being starved or beaten or unnecessarily frightened.
Perhaps angry more than frightened is the way to describe the reaction of Randolph Hearst to an initial statement this week by Attorney General William Saxby. Saxby said that if the FBI knew where Patricia Hearst was being held, they'd try to get her. Hearst was clearly upset.
As I understood it, and as I understand it now, the FBI and all the enforcement officers have Patty's safety as the first thing that they in their mind. And to make a statement that you're going to bust in and shoot the place out from Washington is damn near irresponsible.
General Saxby later backed down, issuing a so-called clarifying statement, saying ultimate decisions were up to Mr. Hearst. Another general provided further word from the SLA yesterday, one of its leaders who calls himself General Sin Ku. The tape-recorded message was for Randolph Hearst, who says $400 million is an impossible amount, but he'll try to come up with some feasible food distribution plan. General Sin Ku was somewhat sympathetic.
You may rest assured that we are quite able to assess the extent of your sincerity in this matter, and we will accept a sincere effort on your part. We are quite able and aware of the extent of your capabilities, as we are also aware of the needs of the people.
The oil needs of 12 consuming nations brought them to a conference convened by the United States this week. There was a call by the U.S. for world cooperation with the Arab oil producers instead of bilateral deals. France, which has made such two-way deals, said no. That fractured the European common market, as Michael Landers reports from market headquarters, Brussels.
The common market 9 came away from the Washington conference bitterly divided, with 8 of the market countries going along with the key decisions of the conference, France flatly refusing. It was partly that France did not want to do anything at the Washington meeting to jeopardize its special relationships with Arab oil countries. But the reason for France's behavior in Washington goes beyond that. The French still harbor a deep Gaullist resentment of the United States, and from the outset, they viewed the Washington gathering as a disguised attempt by the U.S. to increase its influence in Western Europe. So they refused to cooperate on any of the conference projects that really mattered. But the rest of the common market countries decided that on the crucial questions of oil and energy, they were better off sticking with the United States, even if it meant angering the French and tearing away the facade of unity the common market has been trying to hold up during these past few months of the energy crisis. So what happens to the common market now? The view at market headquarters here is that as long as France and the other market members are so sharply divided over energy, it'll be almost impossible for them to reach joint decisions on other issues. And for the first time in years, there is serious talk here about one day having to redraw the map of the common market with France on the outside. Michael Landers for CBS News, Brussels.
Two Arab foreign ministers have arrived for weekend talks in Washington with Secretary of State Kissinger on disengagement of Syrian and Israeli troops on the Golan Heights. They are Ismail Fahmy of Egypt and Omar Sakaf of Saudi Arabia.
Something has to happen. And this long, long difficulties we have is going to be solved, I hope, during our visit to this state.
One hope in the U.S. is that after Syrian-Israeli disengagement, the Arabs may ease their oil squeeze. Meantime, more than half the gasoline dealers in this country are getting less than 85% of last year's allotment. The Federal Energy Office this week said they can up the price of gas by a cent a gallon. Many dealers thought that was too little, too late. There were these Watergate developments. Special Prosecutor Jaworski said the White House won't turn over any more tapes or documents. Nixon aides indicated the president is not seeking another confrontation like the one that led to the firing of the first Special Prosecutor, Archibald Cox. The Washington Post said sources indicate there may be technical evidence that two of the seven tapes turned over to the prosecutor are not originals but copies. White House Chief of Staff General Haig called blasphemous any conclusion that the tapes might have been doctored. The White House has come under all sorts of attack, but never before faced an unwanted helicopter. Authorities say it was commandeered early this morning from Fort Meade, Maryland, by PFC Robert Preston. He was chased for more than 2 hours by two Maryland state troopers in a faster chopper of their own. He finally hovered over the White House lawn. There was a fusillade from federal police on the ground, and Preston landed. No member of the Nixon family was at the White House, but one of those Maryland troopers who pursued Preston said a lot of other official-looking people were around.
I've never seen so many blue uniforms, black uniforms, yellow stripes, and what have you, all come out of the bushes like somebody set fire to an ant colony.
PFC Robert Preston was to have been arraigned tomorrow for unlawful entry. Instead, he has been sent to a hospital for psychiatric examination. The World This Week is produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Steve Young, CBS News.